Thanks, Lynn. Okay, at this time, I would like to introduce one of today's Al-Anon speakers, Helene.
Hi, everybody.
Okay.
I'm Helene, grateful member of Al-Anon.
Hi, Helene.
Let me start my timer, and guess I'll start with, this is how I started out my morning, which I start out every morning on my knees. Good morning, Creator. It's me, Helene, reporting for duty, in case there's any question about that. And I asked to hear what I need to hear, say what I need to say, do what I need to do, and to stay out of your way. So that pretty much opens up what I'm supposed to be doing every day, and it keeps it pretty simple. And so I was asked to be on a panel. I just told Beth, put me wherever you need me. So I'm assuming that I'm here because somebody needs to hear something I'm going to say, and I don't know what I'm going to say or who you are, but that's how it usually works for me, is that there's something for somebody here. Yeah. So I grew up in an alcoholic family. I didn't know it was alcoholic. My dad just went away, came back, came home mad, came home red-faced. I didn't know. You know, we just learned how to tiptoe around a lot of things, don't talk at all to him, gauge his moods, and then adjust our behavior. Mostly we, you know, disappeared. I remember very clearly seeing his headlights come into the driveway and we all scattered. And that included my mother, unless she was, you know, whatever, doting on him, trying to appease whatever it was that he was miserable about that day, you know, because there was no pleasing that man at all. There was a lot of ridicule and humiliation in the family. We got teased even for like laughing. Like it was okay for my dad to laugh, you know, like a, this is going way back, Red Skelton, remember him? You know, it was okay for him to laugh about something like that, but we were made fun of for something like that. So, I don't know, it was a very confusing time of, he was actively drinking during my teen years, and a couple times he went away for a rest, and that's what they called it back then. You know, it was way before treatment centers and all that fancy stuff. There was no mention ever of alcoholism, and there was never anything to do with us kids or the family. There was no mention of the family disease. He just went away, and then he came back. So during that time, my mother would sometimes threaten divorce if he didn't stop drinking, because of course he started again, because he never went to AA, or I think he went to one or two meetings and said he heard all the stories, so, you know, he was too good for AA. And yeah, so she would threaten divorce, and I would fantasize what it would be like, you know, to live in a calm household, and yeah, without my dad. You know, I just thought if he was just not here, man, yeah, I could breathe and I could just be a kid or whatever. And that never happened, because she wouldn't really follow through with her threats. And I actually had a lot of anger towards my mom that she didn't get us out of there. And I think it was because I knew about the threats, you know, back and forth. She would threaten to call Mr. Higgins, that was the lawyer's name, you know, and then he would stop drinking, and then things would be fine for a while, and then it would all start up again. So there was four of us kids. We all dealt with it differently. And I was a kid that kind of stayed home and helped my mom, or tried to soothe her, whatever. And my sister was already off drinking and drugging at 12 years old. My older sister would just get these crazy boyfriends, sometimes bring them around, sometimes they were stalking the house, whatever. I mean, it was just kind of crazy. And my brother was off stealing stuff, and actually quite good at it, because he didn't get caught much, you know, but he'd be doing some illegal activities. And then my dad stopped drinking, but that didn't stop anything. It was still, all the isms were still there. It was really confusing for me when I came into Al-Anon, because it's so much about the drinking. My father is a periodic binge drinker. So he went long periods of time, which is super confusing as a kid, you know, just watching that. But interestingly enough, My younger sister is alcoholic and she is a periodic binge drinker. And her daughter is a periodic binge drinker. So there's some genetics there for sure. Her daughter just a couple years ago got a DUI. She went to a baby shower, had one mimosa, and she was off, you know? And she just drank until she got pulled over and, you know, just had to do the usual stuff. And she doesn't have a problem because she thinks she can stop. And my sister said, oh God, she's just like me. And I said, yeah, you know, what are you gonna do? Just be a fine example. My sister has been sober for almost 30 years. So anyway, by the time I was 24, man, I was a mess. I was a troubled person. I was living with a guy who smoked way too much pot, and the weekends were getting longer. So, you know, it wasn't just a Friday through a Sunday. He would, you know, be using already on a Thursday, and it wouldn't end till Tuesday, and Wednesday was hell at my house, you know, because he didn't have enough or couldn't get enough or whatever. And still, I didn't recognize any of this stuff. He was just like my dad, very critical. So that felt comfortable at that time to just live with somebody who criticized you all the time. I couldn't do anything right. Yeah, by the time I got to Al-Anon, you know, I'm 24 years old and there is nothing here. You know, I got nothing. I don't know what I like. I know what you like. I know. And I'm doing things that are, you know, not safe, you know, like chasing people down the highway. I don't know what I was going to do when I found them, but I would chase them, you know. What do you do when you catch them, you know? Or catch them in a lie. I don't even understand that, but that's, you know, that's what we do, right? So I came to Al-Anon really mad. Really mad at you guys because you're all laughing and smiling. And I'm thinking, you know, and I actually thought you guys are lying because you're telling stories and you're saying how contented you are in your life or whatever. And I'm thinking they're lying. They're lying about what's going on. But then I got to know some people and I heard their past and I heard how they were living. And anyway, something intrigued me. I felt something in the room. Even though I didn't say anything, and I looked at the floor for like 6 months. And this is back when we only had three books, you know, so the 12 and 12, the ODAT, and the little blueprint for progress. So there was really no formal way, I guess you would call it, to do step work like we have now. You can do all three right here, questions and everything, hopefully with a sponsor, because I don't need to hear my own thinking around the answers to this stuff. I already know that. I need somebody else's perspective. And so what I've learned in Al-Anon is that the steps show me how to love myself. This is right from our literature. The traditions show me how to love others. And then the concepts show me how to love the world that I live in. And I got to grow up in Al-Anon. It's an awesome place to grow up, right? Because everybody was kind and loving. I've never encountered, you know, much sarcasm or ridicule or anything like that. And it was such a contrast to my family system that it was very hard to adjust, although I was very drawn to the loving and kind people. But then it was so glaring at home when they were so unsupportive and negative about things. So it was a challenge, you know, and I chose recovery. You know, I figure even today, you know, I have a disease. It's alcoholism, the family disease. And I need to treat it or I'm in it. You know, I'm either working my recovery or I'm working on my sickness. And it's not that big of a deal. You know, a couple little things that I gotta do and stay connected or whatever. And I get to live, I get a shot at a good life, but I get to live a really full life too. So what the steps did for me was show me how to love myself, and that I didn't cause it, I can't cure it, I can't control it. You know, I didn't know that I was in an alcoholic family system. I did play a part in some of that stuff by engaging maybe even with my dad and trying to appease different things or chasing my sister down. I used to get in trouble because she would drink and get lost or disappear, and I would get in trouble because I didn't bring her home with me. And how are you going to do that? You know, we're in some activity or event or whatever, and she drinks and she's off and I can't find her. And I'm in trouble. So I learned, you know, you're supposed to chase them down or whatever, and then I can't find them. They get lost so easy, you know. And so anyway, I learned how to love myself. And one of the questions in the Blueprint for Progress, the bigger one, was who was there for you when you were a kid? And it was like my whole life was a jigsaw puzzle, and it was starting to come together, but that question pulled it all together, that there was nobody. And I was like, oh, now that makes sense. No wonder I felt so isolated, so separate from other people, even the people in my family, right? I don't have this intimate connection with them. It was like alcoholism was dropped in our family and everybody scattered. And even to this day, I can say we're very separate people other than my one sister in AA. You know, I'm probably the closest to her. Now, some of that's just because of dysfunction, and I am not interested in toxic people, and so I can separate myself from them and just let them live their lives, and I can live mine, and just because it's my sister doesn't mean I have to accept toxic or unacceptable behavior. So I've been able to just let go, and guess what? It's in the next generation. So now all the nieces and nephews are alcoholic, drug addicts, whatever, and you know, alcoholism is like the gift that keeps on giving, right? It's just all there. It's all oozed into everything. It's all scum over the swamp, whatever you want to call it. And I have a niece in NA for about 15 years, and her sister just died 3 years ago of a drug overdose. There was nothing any family member could have done. That girl was just so troubled for so long, and you know, my sister thought maybe she was helping or whatever by bringing her home every time after treatment or whatever. But really, you know, my take on that was she was really enabled to death. And we can do that as Al-Anons. I've enabled a lot of people. And so I guess that's where my the traditions come in, where I can love other people. So what I know about the traditions is where I end and other people begin. You know, letting other people have their process and not taking on their pain or their lessons, right? Now I can do that easily in sponsorship, because let the people struggle or whatever. I've told many women, you know, I'll visit you in the hospital because that's where you're headed. And they say, oh, you know, and I say, well, I don't know. You know, I guess if you're choosing to live like this, that's what's going to happen. And I'm concerned about you, but I can't do anything about it. And but then with family members too, you know, I couldn't save anybody. I'm not going to save anybody. There's no such thing as that. Or thinking that somehow if I hold on to them hard enough or long enough, they're going to see the light, you know, or whatever. And really, it's a painful process to just let people go, right? But that's exactly what we're supposed to be doing. I don't know how many times I have to hear that in Al-Anon. You just have to let go. I bring my sponsor something, she goes, oh, yep. Helene, well, now you just need to let it go. Yeah, you know, but, and there's ways that I know how to do that. I journal, I write, I pray. There's lots of different ways that I can figure out how to do that letting go. And most of the time today, it's a relief to just let people go and let it happen, whatever's supposed to happen or whatever. My dad died about 10 years ago. He never recovered, or he never could reconcile things from his past. So that's the other thing that the steps and the traditions have given me. I made peace with my past. I can't say enough about this book. It's intense, and you better have a sponsor when you're going through it, because it's right to the point around a lot of things, and it has questions at the end of each chapter, which is awesome. And I'm just going through it again with my sponsor in a like a small group or whatever. But even the loss of the dream of, you know, what I thought maybe a family supposed to look like. You know, mine did not look like that. The good news is I was able to create that for myself. So I grew up in Al-Anon, 24 years old, way before I had kids, yay. So my kids got Al-Anon. They were also all an Alateen at different times, and they learned a lot of different skills in Al-Anon that I can still see in their lives today. Now they're 25 and 29 years old, and I can still see how they practice some of those principles. They're principled people. And if they have a problem with alcohol, they know exactly where to go. You know, we've showed them what recovery looks like, and they get to have a choice. And actually, when my daughter was about 8, she said, she was in Young Alateen, and she said, what do I do after Young Alateen? And I said, well, then you can go to Alateen. And she said, oh, okay, what happens after Alateen? And I said, well, then you get to decide if you want to go to Al-Anon or AA. And she said, oh, I think I'm going to go to Al-Anon. And the other two were undecided. So that's about right. You know, it's three kids, you know, what are the odds? So with the traditions, I also learned how to not interfere with people, not interfere with what's going on. So at one point, my son was 16 years old, and his older brother wanted to borrow money from him. It was $1,000. And oh man, I wanted to get in there and say, don't do it, you know, because his older brother tended to smoke a little pot and disappear at different times. And you know, my sponsor said, you know, he needs to learn that lesson. You know, I talked it out with her first, thank goodness, because instead of jumping right in with my son, and I said, I don't know, what do you think, or whatever. Anyway, he decided to do that, and it took him a year to finally get his money back. And he said to me, Helene, I'll never do that again. I was like, okay. See, now I would have, you know, gotten in there to think I'm helping or whatever, but he learned a pretty valuable lesson from his older brother. He won't do any kind of money transaction with that guy. So my higher power talks to me, or I found out through doing my step work and tradition work, my higher power talks to me through people and through nature. So then I need to be out in nature and talking to people, right? Otherwise, I'm not hearing any of those messages. And it's been very comforting to me, because then I don't, you know, I stopped a long time ago looking for something from my dad, say, looking for that approval or that whatever. The guy never had it for himself. What makes me think he can give it to anybody else? And there was a freedom in that, to just let him, I could just let him love me the way he could. He was a chef, so I let him cook stuff for me. Even if it was the same stuff every year, it didn't matter. I just said, what do you want to cook for me, Dad? And he'd make some salmon or something. And you know, that's all he could do. And I think he had a dream too, like this, of this family and what it would look like, and he was going to prove something to his dad. And he had a business, he had us four kids, he had this house, he had this illusion or whatever, and his dad never got to see it because his dad died, you know, and it was over. My father could never really, you know, he wanted like a big family, but he didn't know what to do with us. He had no way of relating to us. He had no way of being intimate with us. So, you know, I had to let go of that, and it's too late. I'm grown up, you know. You don't get to have a second childhood, other than in Al-Anon. I got one, because that's been super fun. So my hope for all of you today is to make peace with your past, and live in peace in the present, and cultivate peace for the future. And I've done it through the steps and the traditions, and I continue to do it after 40 years. I'm still here. I still am excited about Al-Anon. I still get a lot out of it. And I'm a nerd for all the books. I just got my new little service manual. I'm trying to see what's different from the other one. I mean, it's given me an owner's manual, and it's a good way of living. I've proven to be, you know, I came an empty shell, and I'm actually a person today with a lot to give to people. And it's only through doing the step work with a sponsor. My marriage is better because I have a sponsor, he has a sponsor. We take some stuff to them before we bring it to each other. That makes it really stronger. And super grateful. Sometimes my higher power talks to me through music. So on the way here, I heard a song and it said, one line was, oftentimes we live our lives in chains and don't even know we have the key. And this is my key, you know, and I was all closed down and in a lot of distress and very angry about the past. And I've got the key to a whole new freedom of life. Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much. And next we have Kevin.
Great. All right, thank you. My name's Kevin. Thanks to the committee for inviting me to speak here today. And I thank Alcoholics Anonymous for their contribution to Al-Anon. Because, you know, learning a little bit of history about Alcoholics Anonymous and everything, the miracle that happened there for that program, and then the way Al-Anon has evolved from that is just, I think it's just fascinating. And divinely inspired, absolutely, I feel like. So, I hope not to repeat some stuff that Helene said, because a lot of what she talked about is my story also. I grew up with alcoholism and didn't know it. My mother went away for a rest, you know, and I was 8 years old, somewhere around there. That's, you know, somewhere in the mid 60s, and she went away for 3 months to the state mental institution. And I don't know how much I felt guilty about that. I knew that my brother and I, you know, we're doing a few things probably shouldn't have been doing, you know. I was in first grade, I'm skipping school, you know. And we had a small place, a ranch outside of town, and he and I would hike out there, get on our horses and be gone. And, you know, and I can remember in second grade, my dad caught us, brought us back, and I can remember walking into the second grade behind the bulletin board crying, you know, because I got to go back to school. But no, you know, nobody ever said, geez, I wonder what's going on there with those Cox kids, you know? But again, I didn't know. My mother was in treatment for 3 months at the state mental institution. I do remember we went to get her, you know, 300-mile car trip down there to get my mother out of the mental institution, and then we went on vacation. There's the alcoholic family, right? Nothing happening here, you know. Just keep going forward, doing what you're doing. And so it wasn't until years later that my mother actually admitted that she was there for drugs and alcohol. She was a prescription pill addict and alcohol, and she actually went to Alcoholics Anonymous. And think about that, in 1965, that would have been something, you know. But we were in a little small town, northeastern Wyoming. I'm sure that was tough. Again, I didn't know until I was in treatment myself, and they put up on the bulletin board the dynamic of an alcoholic family, you know, little circles and the way they connect. And then each role, the alcoholic, the enabler, the hero kid, usually the first kid, the scapegoat, usually the second kid, which is stealing cars and stuff, the third kid, which is the lost child, the quiet one and everything, and that was my family. And I was number three. I was number three in that family. So I was the quiet one, didn't want to make waves. And again, I never saw my mom, you know, park the car on the lawn or, you know, or not come home or something. She would, at times she was up all night doing laundry and then she slept all day. So it was like, we missed her, you know. She was really kind of checked out, and I understand that. I understand what she was doing there. And so lost my train of thought with that one. So I didn't know until they put it on the bulletin board, and I was like, damn, that looks just like my family. Just like my family. So that was my first indicator of that. And I didn't get to Al-Anon until, you know, my head kind of cleared, and I realized how my marriage, how much trouble that was having, you know, and it had always had, but it's just that delusion when you're in an alcoholic marriage and all that stuff. So so that's when I started coming to Al-Anon, and that was February of 1985. And again, had three books, you know. And I'll plead a little bit of ignorance with some of that. At the time, in the area I was in, there wasn't a lot of emphasis on sponsorship and actually working the steps and what that meant. Went to meetings, and, you know, so I was really just kind of around Al-Anon. I came to meetings on time and left right after, you know, didn't really participate or go to coffee with people after or anything like that. That took a while. So so in how Al-Anon works, it talks about, before coming to Al-Anon, the surest way to survive was to handle everything ourselves, to keep quiet about our problems, and to trust no one so that no one could disappoint us. And like Helene talked about, my siblings, we were like a covey of quail that shot at. Everybody just went in their own direction, did their own thing. We never talked about it. Jesus, crazy. Mom's up all night, you know, or they're fighting every day, or, you know, my brother and my dad are in a fist fight in the kitchen, or, you know, there's just nobody. It happened, and we never really talked about it afterwards. Never came up. We just moved on. So so there were some issues I needed to work through. And that sentence there kind of defines it. You know, I felt like I have to do this on my own. And even in Al-Anon, it was kind of like, I don't really want people near me. You know, I'm going to, because I didn't have any of that trust. I'm going to report that doesn't work very well. At least it didn't for me, what I know today. And so, with the steps, the best way that has worked for me is a real logical, practical approach, and that is pencil and paper in this book here. The newer ones have numbers on all the questions at the end of the chapters, and I wrote them in, you know. And this is what I do with the men that I sponsor, too. They have a workbook that have all the questions and use a little space to write. But I tell my guys, you get a notebook, you read that section, you highlight what you think applies to you, and you write out the question. Because we're not looking back and forth at answer and question here, you know. You write out the question, you write out your answer, and you got plenty of pages. You don't have to confine it to one paragraph, you know. So that's what finally worked for me. You know, I hung around Al-Anon. I finally got a sponsor, and I was able to work the steps. And that's what I mean by working the steps. This is pencil and paper, and write it out. And really, with the traditions also, that's the way I ended up doing it. The same thing in here. You know, the traditions have a chapter, then they have questions at the end of the chapter, numbered the questions, go through the traditions, so that I know. And in classic Al-Anon fashion, a lot of those questions are like, how are you doing this? How are you? And you know, I mean, we talk about the unity of the group through the traditions, but really what they do is, How are you being unified? How are you? Did fear or faith rule my actions today? You know what that's, and that's step 10. You know, so how can I treat myself with compassion in my recovery and ask for willingness to keep trying? That's step 7. One question, you know, and so there, all the traditions and the steps are really pointed back at me and how I'm reacting to life and what I'm doing with life. And so that was the basis for me to get there. And so I was able to do that with a sponsor, a home group. That's been important for me, to have a home group and have a job in that group. And I show up unless I'm sick or out of town. Now today, my home group's a permanent electronic meeting, so I have no excuse if I'm out of town even, you know, to not show up to that group. And I do, and I have a job in that group. I have a job in my local district. I'm the secretary for our local district there, because I want to be in the middle. You know, and I wasn't really a joiner to begin with. I didn't, you know, it was still, you know, you kind of keep, stay there and let me, but I wasn't a joiner. So today I feel like I need to be. I need to be in the middle of it. I need to be doing something. My sponsor and I are had started going through the service manual, because I've been through the steps, I've been through the traditions, I've been through the concepts. You know, like the concepts are how you play nicely with others in the world out there. You know, the rest of them are how I play nicely with myself, and the traditions how I play nicely within the group, and this, and then how do I play nicely in the world too. So that's what I did. I mean, and so applying the steps and the traditions to my life, was able to, one marriage ended in recovery. A few years later, another relationship, but married, had a couple, three more kids, actually. And really, I guess that would be the real contrast. I had two kids that were raised in that alcoholic home, at least until they were 3 and 5 years old. But it still had an effect, because when I first came into recovery, it didn't mean stuff stopped, you know. I was still a mess for a long time. But those three younger kids had never been involved in really the chaos of alcoholism. And my wife and I were both well into recovery. And so we were able to apply those principles, the steps, the traditions, the concepts, to our relationship and the way we raised those kids. We homeschooled them. Which doesn't mean we sat at the table, you know. It was child-led learning. They had an interest. We'd go to the library or whatever. My wife used to say the two most important things for homeschooling is a library card and a National Parks pass. So that's what we did. We were outdoors, and you know, those kids, none of them really drank. One of them, I just found out, maybe has a drink or something. They are a manager at a brewery, you know. But again, like Helene said, they'll know where to go. I'm pretty sure they'll know where to go, because they have seen the example, and it's never been hidden from them. They went to Alateen, they've been to conferences, they've seen me speak, you know, been to AA meetings, all that, Al-Anon meetings. All that. They've been there and they've done that, and the principles I live by in the meetings and amongst all of you, which is easy, right? I take out there too. I practiced in here to begin with, and then I was able to take them out there. So I'm treating the grocery store clerk the same as I treat somebody here, or somebody that was working for me. I treat the same as I would treat somebody within the rooms of Al-Anon. And so those kids, you know, the other two, one's an actor touring with a children's theater company, And the other one is an ICU surgical trauma nurse in Tucson. They're all three homeschooled, never spent a day in the classroom, and they're doing pretty good. And I got to say, that was Al-Anon. It wasn't me. Al-Anon taught me how to do that stuff, how to be, you know, something different, do something different than I had. I knew I didn't want to do it that way, but I didn't have the tools or know how to change it. And I got the tools here through the steps, traditions, concepts. Thank you.
No, thank you. All right, okay, so that leaves me. I'm Jody.
Jody.
And so I forgot my notebook, but I, doing the steps and the traditions, it's not something you just do once and then you don't do it again. It's a matter of doing it and living it. And so, you know, my favorite is step 1, 2, and 3, and I turn my life and my will over fresh every day, and I'm a willing vessel, and I'm open to whatever God has for me to do that day. And you know, I got elected to do this today from Beth, so you know, these steps and traditions, it's a WE program, and I have much the similar growing up story, except for I was the only child, so I got to be 1, 2, and 3 all in one. And so yeah, and my parents were alcoholics, but I didn't know. My mom always had the coffee cup, you know. And sometime during the day, it switched from coffee to wine, and you couldn't tell, you know. And then, and my dad was a truck driver, so he was a functional, I guess, alcoholic. And my grandparents drank beer on both sides all day, you know. So what was I going to do? Of course I was going to grow up and be an alcoholic, because that's what everybody was, you know. But I didn't know that. I just thought that's how you have fun. And so... long story short, I have, this May will be 25 years, one day at a time, clean and sober, and, you know, and that's from working these steps. And so I go to four different, I'm a quadruple winner, and Al-Anon to me is icing on the cake, because I, of course, want to help everybody, and you know, and I don't want to enable anybody. And I married into a couple of daughters that gave me the 9 grandkids, and and a couple of them were using, you know, for a lot of their teen years, and so you know, and it was very hard not to stay out of the middle of that, you know. And so I just thank Al-Anon for helping me put the focus back on myself, and knowing that, you know, I can't change them, and I can only change myself and my attitudes. And that's, I just wear out that serenity prayer, you know. And I want to be the change I wish to see, which is let it begin with me, you know. And so I love the slogans. They're just my go-to. I heard they're the handrails to the steps, and sounds good to me, you know. So, I've also heard that maybe the steps they're not steps to heaven, but they sure led me out of hell. Because, you know, I alone in my head is a scary place. If I'm isolating, I'm home with a crazy person. So I don't want to be there, you know. It's a WE program, and I need to be with my people, and program people are, you know, my family. And so that's why I love the 12 steps and the program so much, is because, you know, I was an only child. And so when I got in the program, I'm like, these are my people. They're people I've looked for all my life, you know, before, and didn't have. So I just was so thankful to find my family and here, and I can go to a meeting, you know, any town, anywhere, and find a fellowship that will welcome me, you know, or no matter how crazy I am, and love me. So I'm just so thankful that, you know, these steps and traditions were easy enough for me to figure out. And And I heard someone say that, you know, the steps were so I don't kill myself, and the traditions are so I don't kill someone else, and the concepts were so I don't kill everyone or something like that. I don't know. But anyway, it just keeps me on the straight and narrow, so I'm going to keep coming back, and thank you all for my recovery. That's all I got. So I guess we're supposed to open it up for questions. Do we have time?